Chapter 7, which tells of the destruction of Toboso and an ear for the bull. Quote, I heard the old, old man say, everything alters, and one by one we drop away. They had hands like claws, and their knees were twisted like the old thorn trees by the waters. I heard the old, old man say, all that's beautiful drifts away like the waters. William Butler Yeats, old men admiring themselves in the water. What was that? Said Mahogany. What was what? Said Harvey. That noise, said Mahogany. It sounded like music to my ears. Oh, said Harvey, that was just the narrator reciting a poem by William Butler Yeats. When our heroes emerged from the cave, they were shocked to find themselves standing at the edge of an 8-lane superhighway. On the way back to town, they were stunned again. Instead of the sleepy, whitewashed place they had left, they found a jumbled collection of hotels and condominiums arranged in the most haphazard and tasteless manner imaginable. They pushed through the congested, traffic-jammed streets until they reached a resort swimming pool that had taken the place of the Central Park. In the chaos, they were separated from one another. Harvey, yelled Mahogany, where are you? Over here, cried Harvey. The captain had fought his way to a TV bar near the pool and was flipping from channel to channel, eating a burrito supreme. This is heinous, dude. They've got more than 40 channels on cable and HBO to boot. Mahogany was speechless. Can I help you? Asked a middle-aged American in broken Spanish. Harvey recognized him as the exchange student from California. What happened to El Toboso? Said Mahogany. El Toboso? Said the man. Quite an improvement, isn't it? It was slow at first, but we got help from the Costa del Sol Development and Planning Department, and they showed us how to move things along. Mahogany leaned over the pool and vomited in the turquoise water. Access is a bit of a problem, the American continued. But in a few days you can take the Ave straight to Madrid and go all the way to Paris. They're just finishing the line this week. Until then, you have to take a bus to Alcázar and catch the train from there. What happened? Said Mahogany, as he and the captain made their way to the bus station. It must have been the cave, said Harvey, as in Don Quixote, what was 20 minutes for us was in fact 20 years. You mean we've jumped to the year 2013? Said Mahogany. The year 2013, echoed the captain. There were buses leaving for Alcázar de San Juan every 10 minutes, and they got on the first one. When they arrived, they found the train to Madrid would not leave for an hour, so they walked out of the station and napped under a nearby tree. When they awoke, they were not sure if they had just come from Toboso or if they were about to go. I had the strangest dream, said Mahogany. I dreamt 20 years had passed, and this land had been ruined. I had the same dream, said Harvey, and indeed he had. We'd better hurry, or we'll miss the bus, said Mahogany, rising to his feet. He went to cross the road, but was cut off by a caravan of Winnebagoes. It wasn't a dream, said Mahogany. To Madrid, said Harvey. They arrived in Madrid at 4 o'clock and hailed a cab. Where is everyone? Asked Harvey, noticing the empty streets. At the Plaza de Toros, replied the chauffeur. It's the anniversary of the death of the great Espartaco. Today his son fights the Alternativa. Take us there, cried Harvey. What did you tell him? Asked Mahogany. I told him to take us there. Good, said Mahogany, anxious to get to the hotel. When they reached the stadium, Harvey leapt out of the car and did a flawless series of imaginary Veronicas escaping by inches the terrible horns of his imaginary bull. "Ole!" he said, and rushed into the crowd. The narrator breaks in here. O watchful Athena, goddess of strength and vigor in fainting hearts, now is the time to turn your eyes to this poor pretender who dares engage in the ultimate battle, the battle of man and beast, reason and passion, ego and id. Bless our gentle hero with a goodly dose of pundonor, granting him the courage and calm to conduct the business at hand. Give him the cunning of Belmonte, the grace of Joselito, the imagination of Manolete, and the bravado of Sanchez Mejías. Harvey was late, and Espartaco II had already fought his first bull. Though performing admirably, he had been gored in the front of his right thigh when dealing the final estocada. Subsequently, he was being treated in the infirmary and had removed his traje de luces so as to be better attended. Harvey entered through the horse stables, came across the close, and quickly dressed for the fight. Rushing through the arrastre, he took his place with the second matador and watched as the third torero finished his bull. It was 5:20 when Harvey entered the ring. The crowd, overjoyed at seeing the wounded Espartaco come out for his second bull, cheered loudly. Then they turned to watch the sign change over the toriles. It read, 69 Apis 666, and a white 1,400-pound bull charged into the ring. The captain did not flinch, even when it became apparent that the bull was arrogantly familiar with the ways of men. For not only did the bull circle about the ring, inciting the cheers of the crowd, but he paused before a striking Cordoban princess in the shady section of the barreras. The crowd hushed, for they knew this familiarity would make the bull impossible to kill, and they feared for the life of Espartaco. Undaunted, Harvey took his capote, marched toward the beast, and began the fight with a series of graceful veronicas, just as he had in the parking lot. Then he fell to his knees, taking a pass from the right, then rose to take one from the left, and ended with a perfect media veronica, stopping the bull in its tracks. The plaza roared a chorus of oles, tilting back their bodas and toasting the magical youth. Then the picadores entered, lancing the bull and weakening his neck. The banderilleros followed, placing their banderillas with uncanny precision in the bull's withers. When they were finished, Harvey leapt out of the ring and exchanged his capote for the smaller muleta. He folded it carefully in his left hand, placing his sword across it and holding it with his thumb. Then he re-entered the ring, gargled a glass of water, and spit it on the sand. Walking around until he reached the spot where the bull had paused, he arrogantly singled out the same Cordoban beauty and, doffing his montera, declared, "Va por ti." The crowd roared, and Harvey turned to the bull. "Ah, toro, 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 dulce toro, ah, toro, 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 bonito toro," he said, as he sweetly approached the beast. Waving his muleta until the bull's eyes were fixed on the lure, he began his faena with a series of naturales, 5 naturales that were all linked and beautiful and slow. He did 5 more, as good as the first 5, without moving a step. It was as if Harvey and the bull were in love, tied by a secret supernatural string. Harvey coaxed him by again, this time with a passe de pecho, a trincherazo, a manoletina, a derechazo, and, to finish the impossible sequence, he did a dangerous passe de la muerte, raising the bull's horns up past his chest, brushing his pechera, and touching the underside of his chin. Then Harvey backed away, raised his sword, and prepared for the estocada. Properly placed, it would slice the animal's aorta and continue through the bottom of his heart, passing his stomach and bladder and lodging securely in his loins. The bull's eyes were fixed on the muleta, and the captain shifted his weight carefully to his left foot, preparing for the moment of truth. Then a breeze caught the muleta and exposed him. "Agua! Agua!" shouted the crowd, suggesting Harvey wet his cape to keep it still in the wind. But it was too late to stop now. Slowly, he coaxed the bull in a circle, then, breaking his stride, advanced the leg closest to the beast, brought his other up even with it, took another step, and poised himself for the kill. Corto y derecho, he thought. Corto y derecho. Then Harvey did something extraordinary, something entirely unexpected and insane. He dropped his muleta and fell down on all fours. The bull stopped in its tracks. Harvey charged, and the bull pulled away. Harvey charged again, and the bull jumped. He charged a third time, and the bull dodged gracefully to his left, letting Harvey pass under his horn. Harvey charged again, and the bull let him brush his cheek with his shoulder. Then Harvey backed away, pawed the earth, and came with all his might. This time the bull did not move, and the captain impaled himself on both horns, sending a fountain of blood leaping into the air and spraying the ground. A cheer rose from the crowd. It had been 20 years since they had seen a fighter give the death blow recibiendo. It mattered little that it was the bull and not the man who had performed the feat. Harvey crumbled to the ground. The crowd looked at the clock. Eran las cinco en punto de la tarde. Era muerte y solo muerte a las cinco en punto de la tarde. Que no quiero verla, que no quiero verla, que no quiero ver la sangre de Don Capitán sobre la arena. Translation. It was exactly 5 o'clock in the afternoon. It was death, and only death, at exactly 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't want to see it. I don't want to see it. I don't want to see the blood of Don Capitan on the sand. From Federico Garcia Lorca's poem, Llanto por Ignacio Sánchez Mejías. The crowd rejoiced in the bloody spectacle, calling for two ears and a tail. They threw hats, botas, carnations, handbags, and brassieres to the bull who circled the ring, bowing repeatedly to the woman in the barreras. The bull seemed godlike, almost human. In fact, it was none other than Zeus himself who had taken the form of a bull to seduce the Cordovan princess. He had succeeded, and the woman, overwhelmed by the beauty of the glistening white beast, climbed over the barrera and onto his back, riding him proudly around the arena. Harvey was less active. He had been gored by the god of gods in order to satisfy Zeus's carnal desires. Athena, disguised as a banderillero, approached her father and seized him in such a place that, had he moved so much as an inch, his amorous conquest would have gone for naught. "Let me save my captain," she threatened, "or I will end your beastly ways." Zeus assented, and Athena rushed to Harvey. When she touched his lips with the ambrosia of a magic fountain, he sprang to life. The plaza, seeing Harvey up and on his feet, felt robbed of the delicious agony they had been afforded, and booed profusely. Mahogany had witnessed the spectacle from a seat in the last row and ran down to his friend in the ring. They wasted no time. Fleeing into the infirmary with the crowd in hot pursuit, they rushed through the stables and out to a taxi in the street, then sped to the train station, hopped on the first car they found, and pulled away as the frenzied mob reached the platform. Still panting, Mahogany caught his breath and looked out the window, while Harvey settled comfortably in a corner. And as the train rolled on to Barcelona, the last rays of sun fell on the captain's traje de luces, bathing the compartment in sparks of blue and silver.